This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning, this episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Okay, go ahead. That's pretty good.
Voiceover.
Oh, what are we going to do? What are you going to say?
And now, live from Lansing, Michigan.
Dang, you got it all going out.
It's Nina 911.
That ain't happening. That takes it right off the air.
Well, that's going to be our mic check then.
Good evening. This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 109 of Within the Trenches. And we're recording live from Lansing, Michigan, within the Crown Plaza for Michigan Nina 2016. And I've got some excellent guests with me today. I've got Greg Van Buren. What's up, man?
Hey.
We just talked a little while ago on 108.
We did. We had a blast.
That's right. It was a good time.
It was.
And then we have two members of the 911 Wellness Foundation. I have Deanne. How's it going?
It's going well. How's
Excellent.
It going with you?
I'm doing well. And the always awesome, good stuff, Jim.
Gregarious.
You were supposed to read from the bio. I'm leaving now.
How big is your bio?
Actually, it's four words. Just the wrong four words. Your words are the wrong four words.
Oh.
Now, please go ahead.
No, serious. I was curious. I mean, I haven't been in a class of yours for a while. So.
Okay, you want to know the
Don't
truth?
Read his bio.
I have yeah. three
Lengthy.
Bios.
You have three bios?
Ask for your bio when you're going to do a presentation or write articles and stuff. So I have the bio that's the regular bio, but then I give them a small and a tiny bio because I don't like having the big bio thing. It's just like, say who he is and
right.
let him do it.
Do you get nervous when they start
when?
Saying the long one?
No.
Like the
it just gets
like
boring.
The suspense is killing
it,
you and
I'm
stuff?
Imagining. I'm empathic. I imagine how bored they are sitting there listening to it.
Right.
They are like, bored oh, when they're man. Listening to
so
it.
So let's just get down to it. That's the way I feel.
Awesome.
Right, Greg?
Listening to you?
Well.
No, when they no. listen to somebody give his bio,
giving your,
they like oh, go to yeah. sleep after the first paragraph.
Let's not
is this,
begin.
Is this
to,
the same rating as the last podcast?
Oh yeah,
or
yeah,
is this
yeah.
cleaner?
No, it's
because I could
same.
Give two shits about his bio.
Thank you very much. I rest my case.
Well, there you go. You just want to get to the class,
you
right? Because you
right.
want to learn.
Like, get to the meat, Marshall.
Exactly. Says the carnivore eating meat pizza right here.
Oh, that's true.
While we speak, which is rude, but it's all right. You're a dispatcher. You pocket your food. Thank you very much.
Zempe One box. More piece is for you, pal.
Oh, that's
Thank
funny.
You. Wow.
So you've got a four-hour class that you're going to be doing tomorrow.
I do.
I think so.
Yes, I do.
Unless it was supposed to be for today.
No.
Because everybody was asking you, like,
yeah.
I can't wait for your class today. And you're like, wait, what? If that's true, I don't have anything prepared.
Yeah, so I told Jerry Tapper's Van Buren crew that if they expect me to teach today, all they're going to get is tap dancing.
Hey, that would have been a good one.
Well, for about
well,
6 seconds.
Well, you did kind
yeah.
of do a little hoedown when you were talking about it as well. You started doing it.
I did, but this is audio, so
you do a hoedown.
He did a little. It was a little hoedown. Yeah,
that's what happens when I'm nervous. I do a hoedown.
You do a hoedown
mm-hmm. sometimes. What do you do when you're nervous? I'm sorry, I'm not the interviewer.
No. Keep going.
What do you
that's
do
what
when,
we're doing
when you're nervous?
Wow, I don't know.
I think
okay.
Well, he can try.
This is not your class
don't
now,
Jim. Ask me as the psychologist person right now. I'm just being a guy. Right, Ricardo?
That's right.
Oh, there. Thank
exactly.
you. Back
you,
to you.
What do you do when you get nervous?
Well, I tap dance. We already established that. What,
no, you said you
else?
Do the hoedown.
Right.
There is a difference.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, you caught me in an obfuscation. Okay, so what do I do when I'm nervous?
What?
I actually...
What did you just say?
I dare you to try to say that right
wow.
now.
Obfuscation.
Precisely
yeah,
that.
Yeah, thank
yes.
you.
Obfuscation. Oh, wow. She did it.
To obfuscate. To conceal the truth with an apparent truth, which
Dang.
Is, in fact, not
Webster
true.
Just hooked us up with
yeah,
a definition.
Right.
I just made that up.
Let me Google
oh, very
that.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. I'm wondering, people listening around thinking, well, let's dial into something else.
So what's your class going to be about?
So it is how to stay sane at home and well at work, which is recognizing, if you imagine, I'm going to give you a preview of this.
All right. Excellent.
Imagine a large number 8. The numeral 8. What does it mean? Nothing except 8. Now, if you turn it on its side, now you have kind of like the oval track that a car races on, and we go from work to home and home to work and work to home, and we bring stuff with us in both places. Greg, can you relate to this?
Infinity.
Yeah. Infinity.
And it's and it goes on and on. It's the show that never ends. That's right. That's right. So the idea is how to recognize the way in which 911 work demands and stress impact the way the telecommunicator's brain begins to think, which becomes different over time, and the way telecommunicators communicate, all the way they deal with emotion. So they take that home. Now that affects and changes the way the family rolls. And it can be good in many ways, but it can be also very challenging. That's at least that's my premise. And so we talk about how do we work through that and okay, so we're not just rocking the console now. How do we make sure that family life is able
rocked
to be,
too.
Is right. rocked too. Exactly. That's it. That's it.
That's good.
Class dismissed.
Well done.
Wow, that was good.
All right, and that's going to be the wrap-up of this episode. No, just playing. No, that's good. Do you also teach like how to turn it off then? I mean, is that...
Well, I don't have solutions. Well? I just talk about the problem and then we leave. Well, you want solutions, they have to pay for that.
Oh.
Yeah. No, yeah, yes, we do, definitely. That's the whole idea is,
cool.
You know, and here's the thing. If we're going to define the challenges, we better be able to offer solutions.
Right.
And so what we try to do is drill down, and it can't be cookie cutter. We have to look at the reality of how hard that is to turn off. And so then what is required? It's actually a strategy which we would call, I won't say this in class, but it's cognitive behavioral strategies. Be able to notice what the thoughts are, to recognize the distress or the warning sign that it would be smarter to not interrupt your spouse, but to listen for more than 13 seconds. If you know
and
what I mean.
And it takes practice.
Oh, yes. No,
it
of course.
Does, doesn't it?
To actively listen.
Right.
Because as dispatchers, our minds are moving 100 miles per hour. And so right. especially... Well, for me, especially listening to a story that I've already heard, I have to remind myself that my spouse doesn't remember telling me this story.
Right.
So I have mm-hmm. to actively listen to the story that he's telling me as if I've never heard it before.
Right.
So instead of biting his head off or jumping into his shit.
Right.
I have to say, okay, Deanne, take a deep breath and listen to the story as if you've never heard it before.
Which is easier said than done.
It right. is not easy.
Now what happens to me, my hearing at work is different than hearing at home.
Ha.
When I go home, my hearing is tuned down. And my wife will say, did you hear what I said? Sorry, I didn't. I'm not at work.
Yeah.
You know?
See, and I when I would go home after work, I couldn't turn it off. So right. I would walk in, and my wife would be talking to me, and I'm there, but not fully there, because I hear what my kids are doing.
Yes.
I can hear, like, the food cooking. Yep. I can hear the TV that's on.
Yep.
I can hear what the neighbors are doing or whatever, and then I'll zoom right back into her, and she's like, did you hear what I said? And I'm like... Yeah.
Well, I heard you,
yeah.
but I can't.
It's the sensory overload.
It's also crazy.
It's also, I call you guys hybrid listeners. Nobody listens like a telecommunicator because your style of listening is so selective. So it's like, yeah, I heard the part that was, excuse me, important.
Yes.
The rest I filtered out because I had to move on to
right.
the next
That's
thing.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I still do that now. Like, I'll be in the office sometimes and I'll be working. And I can hear people out there saying stuff and I'll answer them and they'll say, what the hell? How did you hear me? Was it just that I said your name? I was like, I heard your entire conversation. Like, but you're in the office and you have headphones on. I'm like, yeah. I was like, this dispatch ear. I was like, I can hear everything that's going on out there.
Exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I can't turn it off. That's the thing. Even now when I go home sometimes, I can't turn it off.
And when people say, I can't turn it off, what that means is you care about your family. You want to, but you make repeated efforts and it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you truly cannot, but it feels as if you can't, which brings
right.
us
yeah.
to what is the solution? How do we do this?
See, right. And I jokingly told my wife, which was not a good joke to say, that my hearing aid was turned to wife. So that's why I couldn't hear her. And then she was like, what? And I was like, I was just playing. I was like, wait. Oh,
I mean, turn to life, honey. I turn to life. I'm here for you yeah. constantly. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So it was not a good thing to say.
I can't imagine that yeah. would be.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, She's from Florida, and she had, you know, an older brother and stuff. So she'll give me a nice clack on the arm.
Yeah, she's no like, kidding, crack. Right?
I'm like, oh
yeah.
Man.
Well, you know,
like,
what,
I made a bad joke. I'm sorry.
What Deanne said is what we want to do, what all of us want to do. But if we are ECGs, you know, out of the ordinary caregivers, extraordinary caregivers, in others who do this work that's weird, where we're exposed to trauma and stuff at overload level, and we're trying to help, but we're also facing life and death stuff. I mean, we're maxed out. So I remember, this is my confession, it was the last 2 minutes of a Lions game. I'm laying there on the couch. I wanted to be so, like, not thinking about anything serious in my life, because I've been dealing with folks who are struggling with suicide, and I want to be there for those people, and I am, but then I'm exhausted, right? So there I am at Sunday. The Lions are finding yet another creative way to lose in the last 2 minutes. And I want to know, this time, how will they do it? So right. I'm watching. My wife comes in. She wants to talk about finances. I mean, she wants to talk about finances. Mm-hmm. It's a minute and 30 seconds left in the Lions game. So I swear, here's is what I did. I don't want to tell anybody but you guys. Okay? I took the remote. I held it in front of the TV out like this so she could see what I was doing. And I pushed the volume button up, up,
oh,
up,
no.
up, until it was so loud that I couldn't hear her. And I saw it out of the corner of my eye. I looked, and the disdain, it was like steam. She came to me after the game was over and said, "And you call yourself a therapist?" Yeah, I don't do that anymore.
Then she didn't want to talk about it after, did she?
No,
when
not
you're,
then.
When you're willing to talk about it, then she doesn't want to.
Because no.
I have to also admit that there are times when my husband wants to discuss something while I'm watching the Detroit Tigers. And anybody who knows me knows that there is not a bigger Detroit Tigers fan than myself.
Really? And they won tonight.
Oh, my.
And they won tonight.
Yeah.
They played the majors, not Little League tonight. So when he wants to talk to me and I'm in the middle of a game, I can pause it. So...
You have to pause baseball. It's already so slow to begin with. You could have a whole marital discussion about children,
no, you
family,
did
sex
not.
Between five pitches. I mean, it's like it goes on forever.
Don't you dare. How dare you?
I'm sorry.
That's
I'm
awesome.
Sorry.
So anyways, I have paused it and then turned to him and said, "Go ahead." And unfortunately, that's like the bad joke. He says, "Never mind." And I'm like, "Okay, no, I'm serious. Go ahead and tell me. I promise. It's already paused, so I will pay attention to what." Nope, not willing to talk about it now.
Oh man.
Yeah.
You know, this is one thing that I used to get. So, my wife and I would, you know, we'd be talking or whatever, and then if it ever went into, like, not like a straight on argument, but just kind of a disagreement.
Oh, wait, you guys didn't argue, you disagreed.
That's right.
Oh.
And
keep going.
And what would happen is, and I didn't notice it at all, but she would say to me, "I'm not one of your domestic callers. Don't talk to me like you're in dispatch right now."
It is.
I'm like, "Oh, shit. Was I really talking like that?" Like, I didn't even realize.
This is it. While you were doing your prior podcast, I'm actually working on this right now in terms of what happens for you at work. So you're dealing with people who are often lying, who are often cheating, doing cruel things. So you come home and in your mind, everyone's a liar. Everyone's a cheat. There's nobody in the earth that has any decency at all. You know, they should all just be herded up and sent to another country, you know, and then your family starts to talk and it's like, "Yeah, that's a lie. No, I don't believe that." I mean, your brain changes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's something that we develop, I believe, in, you know, working in dispatch and all the people that we deal with. Earlier, a while ago, there were like three or four guys that walked in with these white bags, and somebody said, "What are they doing?" And I said, "What do they have in those bags?" And I leaned over and I said, "Do you feel like all these years working in dispatch that we have just like become suspicious of everything?" And she started laughing. She's like, "Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have."
I don't know what it is. It's just the callers, or what do you think?
Did you watch The Making of a Murderer?
I did not watch it.
Okay.
No.
Well, of course, in my center, everybody's talking or was talking about watching that. And my daughter saw it. She said, Mom, you've got to see this. It's super great, blah, 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 blah. Okay. So weeks have gone by. I wasn't really interested in watching it because I just don't care. So I get enough of that crap just at work. And so I spent one weekend watching The Making of a Murderer. And as soon as I get done, my daughter says, wasn't that fantastic? I said, no, it was stupid.
There you go.
She said, he's innocent, Mom. I said, I don't think so. I think he's a dirtbag, and he got what he deserved. My opinion. I can't believe you didn't see how they set him up. Oh, for crying out loud. Don't even start. That's just how I felt.
Right.
I mean, he's been in trouble thousands of times before, and I personally didn't think they set him up.
See, there you go.
It's my personal opinion.
This is the change. So we could, let's do some skeptics math, some 911 cynicism math. Okay.
No math.
Okay. No. Like... It's not double digit. Don't worry.
Oh. Wow. Did not just.
Oh man. Did you invite him?
No. It's me. I mean, I don't like double digit math. I'm just assuming others are like
right.
me.
Right. Sure.
Back
right.
Work. Did
uh-huh. not, didn't work.
Right. Keep digging, Jim.
Yeah. No kidding.
So anyway, I guess. Even if Deanne could do the math, she probably won't be doing it now. Never mind, she's saying.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, I certainly know how your wife feels at this moment. Right. That's for sure.
Never mind. I really was just kidding anyhow. There's nothing bad to do.
Yeah. When you snuggle up to her and say, honey, I missed you. Yeah. Not so much.
She even did a snap.
Wow. Ouch.
Two snaps and a twist.
Well, I will try to behave better in the rest of this podcast.
So what's with this math you're talking about?
If you take the number of calls you receive in a comm center in a given year, right? And you determine, okay, how many 911 calls and how many non-emergency calls? Both are frustrating for different reasons. You've got the calls that are seemingly not necessary, though customer service says it's their emergency, I will do my very best. But, you know, it kind of gets you after a while, and your attitude about humanity changes. I'm trying to be very polite now. In for Deanne. and then you've got the severe calls. You've got the high-risk calls. You've got the life and death calls and all this stuff. Okay, now, the question is, how many total calls do you receive of those two kinds in a year at your comm center? Now, you take that number. Let's guesstimate what it would be. Van Buren County, you have how many, 45,000 people in the county maybe?
No, it's closer to 80.
80? Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay, so then, and do you know what your call volume is in a year? We need Jerry Tapper here.
The answer is probably a lot.
Yeah,
right?
A lot. I'd hate to guess and be, you know, way too high or way too low.
Well, Allegan's last year, I think, was like only 54,000.
54,000.
Calls for service or phone calls?
Well, calls for service. So, I mean, I guess there's
probably,
a difference
we're probably close
that.
To Allegan. So we'll just say 60,000 calls.
Okay. So my question is, what percentage of the total population actually called you in that year? It's remembering you have frequent flyers
right.
and repeat calls from the same household. What percentage of the whole
actual
service area actually
population.
Called you in a year? What would you guess?
I would say 7%.
Yeah.
That's 7 here?
I'd say 10 or less.
10 or less.
Yeah.
And yet our belief that develops over time is, the way you could hear it, I've got a picture of a little boy and he's licking his toes and his dispatcher mother says, he says, you mean my toes aren't piggies? And she says, no, you're not only your toes aren't piggies, but all people are liars, thieves, cheats. You can't trust anybody. They're all evil and bad.
Right.
I'm moving you to another planet. You know, so it's like that's the idea that develops in the mind as if all of these people out there are whacked. Hmm. And the reality is most people out there are living their lives like us, trying to behave, trying to do a good job. They're right. They're not in terrible, horrible suffering all the time. So we get skewed, we think, in 911 and us who are ECGs who do like trauma work, that we see reality more clearly than the rest of the population. In reality, the question is, do we?
Mind blown. I don't know.
Well, what do you think? You can disagree with me, Deanne, because at least to get even, if nothing else.
You are so going to make me the bad guy in this podcast, aren't you?
How could I do that? Possibly do that?
Oh, see? Your voice will pick up.
whether a person is affluent or not,
yes.
When they have to call us, they are at their lowest.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yep. Correct.
They have hit rock bottom because they can't figure out the property line dispute with a neighbor, the parenting time dispute with the estranged spouse. You know, they've hit rock bottom, and we're their answer.
Right. They're calling us because they need assistance.
Right, right.
Whether they understand whether we can actually help them or not isn't the question.
Right.
The question is, what can you do to assist me?
Right.
Right now.
Right. And that's one of our biggest problems is our verbiage. I can tell a person, we can't do that, and they start dragging their feet and digging in. But if I say, I can do this for you.
That's better.
Yeah.
Good customer service.
Unfortunately, in many cases, there isn't really anything that you can do, but you can still advise them of what they can do and give them the power. I'm sorry, that is a civil issue, but if you call over to the courts, they can assist you in filing a civil suit.
Right. You can look at your FOC handbook and go from there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
What was that? Well, what was that statement?
Yeah.
Unfortunately for us, if it's an FOC issue and it happens on Friday evening, and unfortunately they always happen on Friday evenings or Saturday mornings,
right? And they have to wait.
We do have to advise them that our officers in our county, because sometimes it's somebody from another county and the spouse lives in our county, and they are either not turning the child over or whatever the case may be.
Right.
I'm sorry, in our county, our officers do not respond to FOC issues because they are considered civil. He took my children and he's not returning them. That's kidnapping.
Well,
it's not kidnapping unless
it's
not kidnapping unless something nefarious is going on.
Right. And people are notorious when you tell them, no, we can't do this, the story changes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Well, what if, but he did this? No. We're back to square one, and sorry.
And for those who are listening that are part of the public and not the in public safety, FOC is friend of the court. Mm-hmm. So if you're wondering what that meant.
And here's the interesting, at least what's interesting to me, is which kind of calls do telecommunicators most get written up for? The horrendous life and death calls that are incredibly complex to handle, or the calls that are mundane, annoying,
every day.
The simple BS calls. Exactly.
So what's up with that? I mean, they're technically so much easier, and yet we're getting written up for that stuff.
Well, the problem.
The calls
the
are more obnoxious,
is,
I think.
Is the
those,
same
right. those types.
Whether they're emergent or non-emergent. The problem is that every call is the same, and yet every call is different.
Right.
So there is no SOP that can address every difference in any call.
Right.
Right. As much as you want to have black and white in public safety, you can't.
Because it's all shades of gray.
There's black and white guidelines, and then there's that gray stripe down the center.
Yeah.
Boy, isn't gives
that
you some
your
leeway.
Job. Yeah.
Right.
And we're relying on you to use your common sense.
Deanne's making a comment, and they're talking about the Grateful Dead, and I'm in the middle just confused.
Stuck in the middle with you?
Stuck in the
middle. All right. There's another one.
Okay, we're breaking out in that. We got to sing that, and that is a great tune. Here we go.
Nice.
You know, as we listen to this, though, you talk about the call types, I think about what happens in the mind of a telecommunicator. When are you at your best in your relationships in the comm center? When all hell's breaking loose. That's when everybody's at their best. You're rocking as a team.
Right, right.
Yes.
When life is on the line. Okay, so what's happening there? The focus, the energy is about mission. Okay, you take the call that's annoying. You feel as you're doing good customer service on the outside, trying, but you can feel yourself on the edge because on the inside, you got the adage, you got the annoyance. You're thinking to yourself, this is not a 911 call, or this is ridiculous, or I'm spending my time this. I just dealt with a child who died, and now you're calling about this? Okay, so on the inside, there's all that energy. That is so much harder to manage than when you are rallying in cortisol adrenaline for a mission. And I think that's why more 911 pros get written up.
Yeah, but that's human nature. I believe the rallying and working together as a team, we see soldiers do it.
Oh,
we
definitely.
We see, look at after 9/11. Look at all those people who who joined the military because right. they wanted to do something to help. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I mean, it's human nature, in my opinion. So to me, the rallying as a team is natural.
Yes.
It is what we are naturally supposed to do.
Yes.
The nitpicking little crap that happens every day, that's so much harder to deal with, even though it's less emergent, it's not a big deal.
Right.
We just find it more difficult to deal with.
Complacency loves yeah. downtime.
Yes. Misery loves company.
Right.
Yeah.
That a lot of those callers they call in though during those times for the those mundane type calls or whatever, they're already like shitty as it is. Like yeah. they just got out of work and they come home and their neighbor is getting on their ass because of a property line. So they call in, they're already pissed off. So it just, I think it kind of
it's
rubs
contagious.
Off over,
it is
yeah,
contagious.
Over the phone.
Right.
So you're listening to all of it, but in your head at the time, you're like you were saying, I just got yeah. done with this medical, you know, I did a CPR and well, I got to listen to this dude and try to help him out, but there's nothing I can really do. But then what I always found was my verbal judo.
Yeah.
You can be a jerk and sound professional at the same time.
Mike is great at that.
Sometimes you got to kill him with kindness.
Right.
Of course. Yes.
There you go.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Well, okay. Think about this. There's a researcher. Her name is Kelly McGonigal. Okay, mm-hmm. He's a psychologist. And when we look at how stress affects people, when in other words, some of the small stuff, it's the puny stuff, it's the annoying calls, all that stuff. If we're letting it get to us, that actually is far more disease provoking than the horrendous call if you have what's called the challenge response. In other words, when you rally, like you said, Deanne, you guys are able to do so well, and I've watched it happen. When you have the challenge response, it's not just fight or flight. It's actually cortisol plus something called DHEA, which is a vitality hormone. They blend together. That doesn't hurt you. That actually boosts resilience. But when you're not dealing with the small stuff well, it's when it's irritating, when it gets to you, that actually has a toxic effect on you. So I'm not saying it's actually stress is not dangerous. It's how we're relating to the stressor that makes it dangerous. So this is why, for the sake of not getting written up and at the same time for protecting our own being and our family life, we need to be able to be much keener about that judo.
You know what I used to do going into work, and I knew it was, one, going to be a full moon, two, that it was going to be a traffic grant, and I was hoping that I would be on radios and not on phones because even the more crazies call in. I would listen to Limp Bizkit's Break Stuff on the way to dispatch, and I would get that all, I'd get it all out, and then I'd walk in and be like, all right, let's do this.
Really?
It helped.
That's
it helped.
Cool.
Or I would listen to something and it would help every time. I mean, there were sometimes that I would go in, and actually I remember this from a staff meeting where one of the dispatchers in the staff meeting was saying, because we're talking about morale and stuff and how, you know, we kind of feed off each other, mm-hmm. or it rubs off, and this one person said, that doesn't do anything to me. I don't understand that. And I said, really? He said, you really don't understand that? If I walk into the dispatch center and I'm your supervisor that night and I'm in a pissed off mood and being shitty, you don't think that's going to affect you? And she said, no, I don't think it will. But if I go in there and I'm all happy and everything and I'm pumping people up and like, yeah, we're going to do this tonight, of course you're going to be happy.
Right.
And I mean, she understood afterwards.
Absolutely.
But, right.
But not in the moment.
That's
she
how
didn't
it,
get
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, not yeah. at the moment. You have to really think about it at first, but I mean, that's the way it works. Every time I went in there, I wanted to be in the best mood possible so that my team could do what they had to do.
I attempt to be, if I'm going to be on the floor, I mm-hmm. attempt to be goofy. And as much as I can't sing well, I will sing. Usually some response has something to do with the song that I can recall from my childhood, which is in the 80s. Yes, I'm old. I know. But for me, life's a song. I live the music. So if somebody says to me, who are you going to call? It is going to be Ghostbusters.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
That's what I try to do because I want to enjoy my time on the floor. Mm-hmm. Because when I mm-hmm. am administrative and I have to listen to all those calls for the domestics, mm-hmm. those can be just as traumatic for me as they are when they happen, because even though I know it's not happening at that moment, it still feels like it's happening at that moment. And
yeah, which, you know, Deanne, if we can, this brings up a huge issue which the Wellness Foundation is entering into with. In fact, Kevin Pagenkop is one of the people who's going to help us with this, who's very involved with the academies. And that is looking at what is the impact of call review in terms psychologically on those who do QA and do Q in the country, because we've really overlooked the impact on those people. We assume if it's not live, it isn't.
But it still feels like it.
That's it.
Even though your mind knows that it's not happening right now, it still feels
well, because
like
you
it's
have
right
reference
now.
Point and personal experience. What is a trigger? It's the activation of prior experience, and it's the distress from the prior experience that we feel now, even though we're not the one at the console, or I'm not with a client right now who's suicidal. When I hear someone talk about that, if I don't have resolution of that prior trauma, it's triggering me just as if. Right. So this is where we, Deanne, I'm really glad you brought that up, because we need to be looking strategically, systematically. And that's what we're looking at as a think tank, to come together and look at cue stress.
Dang.
When you say dang, what does that mean? That's kind of like your wow, isn't it?
That's my whoa.
Oh,
that's my Keanu Reeves whoa.
A nod to another movie.
It's getting deep.
Yeah. So everything that we've been talking about here, this is part of your 4-hour class that you're giving tomorrow?
Heavens no, Ricardo.
Come on, of course it is.
Well, no, certainly. We're going to be touching on a lot of this. Here's the deal. When I have half a class, which, thank you very much for that. When I have half of a class, I try not to just gloss over stuff. So we have to drill down on that which we can cover. So we won't cover all these things in depth, but we are going to be looking at that cycle, that figure eight, and I like how you said the infinity sign, because it goes on and on.
Right.
And what we are going to look at tomorrow is how do we create what I call choice points, intersections between one moment and the next, and become aware of what I'm feeling inside and what the thought is inside before I blurt it out, before I act it out. Because if we don't create this intersection between work and home, we carry it home, even though we will, and we insist that we want to bring love to our family. We want to give them all we have. The problem is what we have left is not that much, which means also our impulse control is less, our frustration tolerance is lower, and we go into that situation if we have not prepared ourselves. And I mean, by the way, I mean in terms of psychophysiologically preparing ourselves, not just, okay, I've got to be a good boy. If you can pull it off that way with willpower.
Wow, that's some deep shit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you can do it with willpower, then do it. But I don't know about you, but most of the 911 family that I meet, it's hard for all of us, and I'm included. I can't just automatically go, okay, now I'm going to just behave at my best when I go home. I've got a downshift.
It's a conscious effort. You have to make a conscious
effort. That's my
point. And you have to, for me, because I wasn't blessed with you all my life, even though you're my brother.
That is kind. Thank you.
But for me, it was figuring out combinations of things that would help me clear my mind. Definitely music for me.
Right.
Yes, 80s. Again, I'm old. I get it.
So not that old. I'm thinking 70s.
And
I was there.
I ran so far
Steve
away.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. I ran both night and day. I need to get away. I'm just saying. Thanks for playing.
But you assembled your way of dealing with it. You learn on your own, like early telecommunicators.
Thankfully. Though, unfortunately, not everybody is in the conscience of themselves to be able to figure that out.
Yeah.
Because if they could, you know, this would be a moot point.
Right, yeah.
But thankfully for me, it was a series of things. My mom passed away in 2001, right before 9/11, and I had a horrible year after that.
Yeah.
It was just bad.
Yeah, I remember you telling me.
Because I wasn't ready to let her go. And so one of my dispatchers came to me after a year and said, "You're miserable. You either need to get out or fix it."
It's great.
God bless
told
her
that.
For saying that to me, because that was a wake-up call. And so I talked to Kelly Rasmussen, And she gave me some websites to go to for positive quotes every day. That actually made a huge difference. Just that.
Wow.
A huge difference to me. I made myself read those positive quotes every day for a year.
It's really good.
Plus, I had to make sure that I was consciously listening to my family. Okay, you've got to actively listen when you go home. When somebody wants to tell you something and not pause the DVR just because the Tigers are playing.
I was just saying it's a slow game.
Whatever.
No, but let's not lose your point, though, because, you know, I hear you saying that in a way we are what we eat, right? So you digested all these great thoughts. Me, I ate pizza. All I have is indigestion. I'm, you know, again, just saying.
I don't get indigestion from pizza.
Drink your beer, then.
Tacos.
I'm in an interview right now trying to conduct myself in a proper fashion.
And, one of the things that made me realize that I was really in a bad spot for the stuff that I was doing, even though that I started doing the blog and started the podcast and stuff, because that was my way to release. You know, I would try to talk to people about stuff at work. I was like, this isn't working. So I started writing stuff down. And that was, I was able to get it out that way.
Oh, that's great.
And then it was the first episode that the three of us did, where you pulled your Jedi mind trick.
I did not do any such
thing. Yeah, you did. That, yes, that you were able to get me to admit what was really bothering me with my chosen path at that time and dispatch and stuff. And all I wanted was to be able to provide for my family and spend time with them as much as possible. And you, I don't even remember what you had said. No, I do. I do remember a part of it. You turned and you looked at me because I said something. And you said, Ricardo, that sounds like a cry for help. And I was like, what? And I started laughing. And then he said it again. And I was like, well, this is what I want. And then I said it. And then I just sat there and I was like, what the hell?
I could see it was an internal conflict.
Yeah.
I said to myself, "But you must help him." don't know.
You don't see, you play off your part, but you don't know many lives that you've touched.
Helps.
Just Jim, every time I've had something traumatic or something that has upset me in my home life, my husband's a veteran who suffers from PTSD and can no longer work.
And is a wonderful man.
He is a wonderful
man. Not that those
are
inconsistent whatsoever. That's the point.
But
he's all of that.
He's had some difficulties 2 years ago between the Michigan conference and the national conference. I had to have him admitted to the psych ward at the VA in Detroit. Yeah, don't make me cry, honey. and I'm really not a crier, but it was really difficult for me to have to admit him. And I remember calling Jim. My first thought was, I just need to talk to Jim. He's my brother, and he is a huge lifeline to me. And you, I don't remember what you were doing, but you stopped whatever you were doing to talk to me on the phone and just listen to me and give me advice and tell me if I needed anything. You would have driven to wherever I was. And you downplay the contributions you make to those of us in this field. And I just need you to know that you are truly my brother.
Thank you, Dan. But I would have charged your mileage. No, listen. I just did it again.
I downplayed it.
Okay, let's admit that even psychology people can be uncomfortable with affirmations sometimes. But that means a lot to me, because when my sister brought me into this, I was telling the leaders at this conference, who we really need to give applause to and a lot of gratitude, because they've done it again, that we're at a wonderful conference. But I was saying, Deanne, this morning to those folks, that when my sister brought me in to teach the first class, it was a pre-con for Michigan NINA. It was the first time I did Survive and Thrive. And there was a room of 35, 40 people there. I thought I was going to go in. I was going to do my best. I'm going to, you know, teach them and engage them. And who knows what's going to happen. I had no clue. I'd never taught a telecommunicator before. And thank God they didn't tell me that they can eat instructors alive. Woo, I didn't realize that. But, you know, after a day, the conversation, people talked on breaks about the struggles they had. It's like they so much wanted to be able to get help with what was impacting them from this work. They so much wanted to excel, not just at work, but at home. And I thought to myself, this is not a one-day gig. This is so much bigger than that. And I felt like these are, I don't know, I felt like I got adopted. And so, that means the world to me. There's no greater compliment.
I can't even tell you how we met, because I feel like I've known you my whole life. I do not remember how we met. Do you remember that? I do not remember. I feel like I've known you my whole life.
I don't. I don't, and I would be inclined to say something silly.
Yes.
So
yes,
I'm not going to do that because I'm not going to downplay it. Okay, I'm having encouragement from people who aren't even with mics. They're saying, they're pointing at me like, don't you blow this off. No, thank you very much.
Whitney was the one who told me about you. When I first started doing this stuff, she was like, I was in this class. His name's Jim Marshall, and he did this and that. And I said, all right, I'll talk to him. I'll see, what happens when we go to Michigan NINA. And then, we were all here, and I think it was Ron Bono was sitting over on the other side, and he came up to us, and he goes, we want you to be at Nationals. And I remember you pulled me aside, and you put your arm around me, and you said, this is where it starts. And he goes, your change starts now. I was like, whoa.
But like, it's crazy. True. It did.
It's been going ever since.
Well, you know what? There's one thing certain about the 911 family. We have people who, there's such a great sense of humor, and as much we talked about the cynicism, the reality is, on the whole, there is an enormously positive spirit in 911. And that sounds, I don't want that to sound corny. There are people who believe so much in what they're doing. And when you come together like this, it's like, it's really a celebration of the work you do. And for me to be included in any way to support that work, that's a big, big deal to me. So, what I experienced at National NINA, that's where things rolled forward for the Wellness Foundation, more importantly for the cause that we were going. So I had experienced it, and I knew that what would happen is you would be brought in by people who value, leaders in 911 and those who run NINA at the national level, at the state level, they notice when people are doing work that needs to be done, and they're going to get behind it. And that's what happened. You've been doing work, Ricardo, that it hadn't been done before in terms of allowing telecommunicators and leaders to tell their story. And not only that, but somehow you're able to do it in a way where we want to be silly, but we get it. We get to it.
It's fun.
And it's fun.
You created this.
Yeah. It's very fun. I have to definitely credit, though, your guys' director, Jerry. She was actually the one who spoke to my assistant director at the time, Tammy, because Tammy was, I don't know, they were in conversation or something, and Tammy was telling her what I was doing. And Jerry was the one who really pushed for me to speak and to do the podcast here. And every time I see her and stuff, I always tell her I will forever be grateful, because if it wasn't, for her talking to my assistant director, we might not be here right now. I don't know. But, yeah.
You still would have done it somehow.
You know, here's the thing, though. Jerry is an instigator. If you folks out there.
No way.
Maybe. Yeah, see, these are her people here sitting here going,
Jerry's kids.
Right?
You're
great.
The Jerry Bears.
But all
we've been talking about Grateful
right
Dead this whole time.
There you go.
That's great.
Very nice.
Yeah, well, no, what I was going to say, though, was Bob Currier, who's the conference chair for NINA and has been for, 13 years, was telling his story to the others in there about how when I first came on board with Michigan NINA and presenting, he was like, who is this guy? How long is he going to stay? Doesn't he realize there's an exit over there? It's like, who is he? I mean, like, anyhow, Jerry said.
We saw that with National, though, too.
Yeah.
What, this, you want to write a stress standard? How dare you want to, you're going to incite people. They're going to get all bent out of shape and think that they have stress.
Well,
that's common
in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. But then there's people in that, and there's Jerry Tapper. Because you know what she said today, that when Bob, in his own loving, kind of I'm kidding. I mean, he could be really a tough guy.
Yeah.
And when he said, "What's up with this guy? And where's the exit for him?" She said, "Wait a minute. We need more people. We need more people to train 911. We need to bring in people and have an open door here. Let the guy in." So my statement really is not about me. It's about Jerry. How many other people don't we know of whose lives she has made an impact? A lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. Her staff is here with us, by the way, and they're nodding their heads like a lot. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
So
the legend continues.
To Jerry Tapper.
Yes.
Sends you out if
she
don't think you belong.
Oh, yeah. Don't cross Jerry Tapper.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it has to go both ways. That's how she keeps her standard.
Right. She loves the business.
Yeah. Well, she's got a large family, you know what I mean?
Right.
And if you don't do the right thing, are they car dealerships, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah, and it's a big, big...
Well, let's see. Car dealerships, propane, wreckers, car washes,
cement?
Water.
Do they do cement?
I don't think so.
Because you don't want to cross her.
All right.
Cement shoes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
The Papa should be named Tapper.
Uh-huh. Nice. I got that feeling.
So what all is the 911 Wellness Foundation going to be doing at Nationals? Because that's not too far away, man. That's like, what, 3 weeks? Something like that?
June 12th, maybe?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, a couple things.
Crazy.
We'll do a couple things. First is we have a few people presenting for us at Nationals. Jim Lanier is one of those people, and myself. And we'll be presenting on basically the update on the stress front. What's been happening when we look at the last 10 years in terms of the way that the 911 family is wrapping their minds and their hearts around the challenges that stress brings to it? What progress have we made? And so we're going to give an update. And when we say what progress, that's not what the foundation has done. The progress being done by a lot of different folks out there. Our job is to be a clearinghouse to proclaim what's being done, to get more of it to happen, and also to catalyze it. So at the National Leader Conference, we're going to be both in terms of presentations and by networking, urging more movement in preparation for Next Generation 911. We're going to talk about, we talked about the NENA standards. So we now have the NENA standard on acute traumatic chronic stress. Well, the nation needs to know the standards there. How do our leaders implement a standard they don't know exists? So the Wellness Foundation has taken it on itself as an alliance partner with NENA to support NENA's effort to get people to know about that, for our folks to implement that.
Not to just know about it, to actually buy in.
Right.
Because there are directors out there who know about it but haven't bought it.
Right.
They don't see as what we do as stressful or just aren't willing to acknowledge it. They may know it in their heart, but they just... Can't get it into their mind.
Yeah, or they're just pulled in so many different directions. They are so overwhelmed that it's not on the radar yet. So one of the things we're going to be doing too is presenting to the National Association of 911 State 911 Administrators. So the group of 911 directors, like Harriet Miller Brown in Michigan, they've asked me to come in. Last year, I spent about 15 minutes introducing an agenda for the future for stress, and this year they asked me to come back for an hour and a half. So what I'm going to do is. Unpack it, right? Yeah. Oh, thank you. But that's the idea. So the Wellness Foundation becomes a vehicle. We're able to hold something up and say, there's a cause and there's a group who's helping the rest of the groups to meet that cause. And so because that was there in place, they could recognize that. NASNA could recognize that. And so we're going to have a chance to push forward the agenda. And here's the goal while I'm there. Number one, that our state 911 ministries would have the chance to see that they can incorporate wellness standards and a process, a game plan, within their state NG911 planning. What happens if we plan NG911 out at the state level? We build it out without answering the questions of how it's going to affect 911 and how to manage the stress that will be different and in some ways multiplied. So we're not anti-NG911. My gosh, it's going to provide tremendous life-saving power. But
right. We've
got to integrate psychological preparation and processes in the adaptation and the implementation of NG911.
Well, yeah, especially because, you know, dispatchers are going to start getting pictures, video.
You would have to bring that up.
Of course, because it's one thing to take a phone call and your imagination run wild, because sometimes that can be worse than seeing something. But now, I mean, we're going to end up getting... videos. Well, and the,
there's another component to videos and photos. Mm-hmm. And that is when you add another sense in what decreases.
That's true.
Your listening skills. Mm-hmm. Right now, that's all we have. Point. So you hear everything in the background. When you start adding video in, the hearing is going to go down. It's scientifically proven.
It's a distraction.
It's going to decrease.
It may not for everyone all the time, but this is going to be a radical adaptation for the brain of a telecommunicator that's been conditioned. You literally create little neural networks in your brain that are just like software designed based on experience and how you manage a task. And over time, telecommunicators, as you're just a powerful point, have learned how to process information through the auditory channel and with the visual imagination, right? So now it's this heavy stimuli is going to be, you have to process that in real time, the emotional intensity of that, while you're trying to pay attention to the audio input. So it is a challenge.
That's going to be crazy, man, because it makes me think about smartphones in general. So I used to have my whole contact list memorized. Now I have it on my smartphone, which makes me feel stupid because my, you know, memorization is gone down.
Well, let's just say that part of your brain has been offline for a couple of decades.
Now it is. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, he's not old enough for a couple of decades of offline.
Okay, all right. I was projecting my elderly.
Let's see. Yeah, like 95, I think I had a CenturyTel cellular phone. It was a Nokia.
See, he does.
It was a brick.
He remembers.
Oh, no, yeah. You know, I remember that.
As we talk about this, though, to me, it's really important that we convey balance in the way we look at this and the way we address it as a 911 family and as an industry. And that is, we do need to do more with the help of psychologists who specialize in traumatology and in processing of information to define the problem, define the challenges that are, but not with pessimism and not with negativity, but more in terms of the better you define the problem. We have tremendous solutions technologically, integrating psych with software. And the Wellness Foundation is also working on this right now. As we speak, we're having some wonderful early discussions, but we are actually going ahead and developing some software. I won't say who the partner is, but so that we will be able to have a system that assures that telecommunicators...
Call me later, I'll tell you who. I'm just teasing.
Well, here's the thing. Think how systematic. she's going to sell my information. So much for my intellectual property.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I'm just teasing.
Sorry. Well, you're getting back at me because I said that double digit thing.
I owe you, buddy.
Which, by the way,
I thought it was the baseball stuff that you were talking smack about.
I owe him big.
Well, that was okay.
Just wait till
I was getting
tomorrow.
Too serious, anyhow, wasn't I?
No, because earlier we were talking about how you need to be plugging your stuff, man. Remember?
We did?
Yeah, you even said yourself, like, I should probably do that.
But I'm not. I'm talking about the Wellness Foundation, which is the stuff that I am so excited about.
Oh, and that
well,
is...
Well, I'm excited about training, too.
That is still your stuff.
That is your stuff, yeah.
It is. It's a volunteer effort that won't go away because here's the thing. If we bring together what our corporate partners are capable of doing with technology, and think how systematized they have become with NG911 preparation. What if we're that systematic with the psychological preparation of the telecommunicator? So, for example, building interface within CAD that allows a screen to come up as an option after the call. Doesn't get in the way of the telecommunicator. It's optional. But allows them to check in with where they're at right now in the moment and be able to activize evidence-based skills right away. So there's a way of measuring the intensity of the call type and the psychological proximity of the person. So if you're the one that took the call for a mass casual, you're like it, right? There's got to be follow through, not just in that day, that week, and that month, like critical incident stress management, throughout the whole year. There needs to be a process that helps us identify what is needed from a menu of service and then be able to deliver that support to that person. So, you know, this is part of where we're going as well. With the Wellness Foundation. Now, if you want to talk about my classes, I'm excited about those too.
Yeah, of course.
All right.
No, don't let him.
No. You talked about the one that you're going to be doing tomorrow. So
yes.
Yeah. So that's big. That's a good thing. I mean, people are listening. They hear that, and you know that'll make them want to, you know, get you, you know, to come out and do more classes, which is something that needs to be done, and that's why we have an alliance as well, because we're sharing each other's information.
We're encouraging
each other out. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, this is the thing. I've taken one of my courses, which is 911 peak performance through optimized home life. I never thought. I hope that the state 911 committee would see that if we support telecommunicators' well-being at home, they bring more of themselves at their best to work.
Right.
So the title had to reflect that possibility, and it does. So tomorrow is selected out, and what I've done is bring new material into that too. But one of the things I'm most excited about though right now is peer support. So I have a class on the power of peer support, which is an introduction, and then moving into certified peer supporters that are customized for 911. And that, again, I don't have much creativity. I thought I was kind of a creative guy, but really everything I've taught, 911 has asked me to come up with. You know, so, but this is the deal. We need people who are certified to provide good peer support in more complex situations in the comm center on a one-on-one basis throughout the year, because ultimately therapists like me, yeah, that's important, but there's nothing I think that can take the place of being there for each other and know how to do it without messing it up.
I personally think you need both.
Oh, you do. I'm not downplaying therapy, but you know, think how much prevention could take place and how much I know as a therapist how relieved I am when I hear somebody has a support system out there. We can't do it once a week or even an intensive inpatient.
Right.
It takes you guys for each other.
And you cannot solve the world's problems without even trying.
Right. Well, and
I got dozens of friends, and the fun never ends.
It's the fun that never ends.
At least as long as I'm buying. Thanks for playing.
Well,
I
need to
do a rim
note.
Shot on that.
Yeah, Yahtzee. We're going to go into the wrap-up of this episode 109. And for anybody who's listening who wants to learn more about the 911 Wellness Foundation or anything else that you're doing, plug away. What's the website? Facebook, Twitter, email, or whichever?
So the 911 Wellness Foundation is easy to find. It's just 911wellness.com. Can't get much easier. And we'll be overhauling that here very, very soon. For the 911 Training Institute and to learn about my courses, that's pretty easy too. It's 911training.net. Yep.
That is easy. Yep. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you very much, all of you, for being
there's
on this
Facebook
episode.
Page.
Oh, there is?
And
oh, there is.
There is a Twitter.
Yes. Thank you, Deanne.
I'm just saying, dude. If you're going to promote it.
I know. I was going to say, I do get tweets
be
all and stuff
inclusive.
From that.
All right. All right. So thank you very much. So if you want to be a part, we want people out there. We need to explode our 911 Wellness Facebook page. Go to Facebook. Search 911 Wellness. Choose the closed group. We also have a public group. Join that as well. But the closed group, all you do is ask to join. And we want to be barraged with requests because we need to go way beyond 2000. We're in 2000. It's a support living room for 911 that you got to be a part of the family to be part of or really love 911. So overextended by 18 seconds, but thank you, Deanne.
Well, wait a minute. There's one last thing, though. You guys also have the GoFundMe, right?
You are very good at this, sir.
Oh, I just want to make sure you get all the stuff out there that you got, man.
We do have a few. If you go to GoFundMe and look for 911 Wellness Foundation, you'll see a plea for support. And we hope that folks will, because you know what? The work that we're doing in the foundation, quite honestly, and the care and support that 911 telecommunicators need to protect themselves and equip themselves deserves more than a volunteer effort. And we do need funding to be able to make that happen. We need our corporate citizens to step up and recognize a tremendous opportunity there for them to be able to say and mean that they are actually there supporting the telecommunicators this way, but also everyone out there who has benefited from a call as a family member. Thank you,
there you
Ricardo.
Go.
Thank you for doing this.
Hey, not a problem at all. Thanks for being on. So as he just said, make sure to go to GoFundMe, and I think it's GoFundMe.com. You can look up for 911 Wellness, find them on there, show your support, get out there. Also like them on Facebook, join those groups, follow them on Twitter. And for anybody who's listening and you want to be a guest on the show or you have any questions or anything, you can email us. And that's going to be WTTpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, and that is @911podcast, as well as Facebook. You can like us there, Facebook.com/WithinTheTrenchesPodcast. And this episode, along with all the others, can be heard 24/7 on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, Google Play Music, and TheJabberlog.com. Have a good one.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to WTTpodcast@gmail.com.